Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. The dictionary defines the term practical joke as a trick played on someone in order to make them look foolish and to amuse others. I have no idea what is so practical about that. But anyway, while this edition of Digital Flotsam is not in itself a practical joke, it's about one that I participated in as a young man, newly married and recently graduated from the RCA Institute School of Broadcast Television Production. I call this edition Terror on the 83rd Floor.
This is Frederick Maness on this Monday morning, August 31st, 1964, speaking for the staff and management of WOR-TV, bidding you a very pleasant good night until this morning when WOR-TV resumes telecasting on Channel 9.
Shortly after I got married, I got a fabulous job. I got a job as what was called a broadcast television engineer. I had gone to a school named RCA Institutes that trained me in most aspects of television production. The school gave you a diverse background in both production and the technical aspects of television. The first job I landed after graduating was on the technical side at a station called WOR-TV, Channel 9, in New York. In those days, Channel 9 was a small independent station owned by RKO General. Basically, it showed old movies. One locally produced show, the Joe Franklin Show, and it carried the Mets games live from Shea Stadium. The Joe Franklin Show was a talk show hosted by someone named Joe Franklin. He was terrible. I often wondered if his father owned the station. Yet despite his lack of talent, he got the most amazing guests on the show. Everybody was a guest on his show. His show was almost embarrassing. Imagine Larry King, only twice as bad. That was Joe Franklin. The rest, as I said, was old movies. As an example, there was this show called The Million Dollar Movie. It used as its theme the theme music to the film Gone with the Wind, which I'm pretty sure it never actually showed. The movie changed once a week, but that movie got lots of play. Movies playing on The Million Dollar Movie got repeated several times each weekday, and a ridiculous number of times each weekend, totaling to more than a dozen times a week. As a child, I loved this. The opportunity to watch King Kong 10 times was irresistible. Later, as an adult working there, seeing the same film that many times was a crashing bore. I worked, oddly enough, in the Empire State Building, on the 83rd floor, in the very building that Kong had climbed several times a week in the 1950s when King Kong made its television premiere. The Empire State Building housed what WOR called Master Control. It was essentially the whole station. Everything was shown from there. Nothing besides the baseball games was actually live. It was an amazing affair. Everything was choreographed precisely to the second and executed by humans according to the printed schedule. Folks who have never seen TV operated at this level have no idea how intricate it is. In fact, I'll bet only a handful of people who are listening to this right now have any notion. The rest of you, all you need to understand is it's way complicated and requires precise timing. Which is what gets us to the meat of this story. A practical joke. First, you need to understand that Master Control was always overstaffed, and the technicians were required to perform any necessary function. The reason you had to do everything was because of the union rules. Technicians were required to have a 10-minute break every hour. When I say required, I don't want you to take that too lightly. They were required. They could not refuse. They had to take their break. The result was that there was always a technician hovering, waiting behind you, eager to get back to work, just waiting for you to be due for your break so they could jump in and assume your position. So you could be working as the audio man until you were forced to take your break. Then 10 minutes later, when your break was done, you had to find someone else who was due to take their break. It could be anyone. The result was you learned to do everything. Okay, now that you understand the environment of the technician, let me tell you about the rest of the world, the guys who worked production. In Master Control, that was only two people, the announcer, who sat in a soundproof booth by himself and read any number of announcements, commercials, bulletins, all live over the air. The other guy was the director. He was the guy responsible for keeping track of the enormous and precise schedule and issuing commands to everyone else to keep them operating like clockwork. Everyone who wasn't in the same room with the director wore headphones, so everyone working could hear him at the same time. You would hear things like,
"Dissolve to 2, standby 2, change, standby announce, announce, standby 2, 3, 4 negate, standby film, roll film, take film."
It really was an amazing skill, and one that we all aspired to. Production people made more money than tech people, and tech people made a lot of money. So the announcer was a guy named Frederick Maness. Fred was someone who had been in radio and TV for 40,000 years and was unflappable. He sat in his little room, completely out of sight from all of us, and when you turned the knob on to open his mic, instantly golden tone words flowed out of it in precisely the correct amount of time. And you turned the knob to silence it at precisely the moment he was finished. He was truly astounding. The director was far less regular. There were three or four directors that rotated. They didn't work as often as us technicians, it seemed. On this particular night, the announcer, Fred, and the director, Tom, I'm using Tom, although I don't actually remember his name, they were good friends and drinking buddies. When we were showing movies, as we most often were, there was nothing for the director or the announcer to do between commercial breaks. So often for the 10 or 15 minutes between commercial breaks, they would walk off of their posts and socialize and drink coffee or whatever. They would arrive back at their posts just a moment or two before the next commercial break and perform their duties flawlessly. Well, Fred, the announcer, and Tom, the director, were both fond of alcohol, and there just happened to be a fine purveyor of such beverages on the ground floor of the Empire State Building. So an idea was hatched. From the 83rd floor, the trip to the ground floor by elevator took about 1 minute. So including the walks to and from the elevator and to and from the bar, the round trip should take maybe 4 minutes tops. With an unbroken movie segment of about 20 minutes coming up, they believed they had plenty enough time to go to the bar, enjoy a cocktail, and return to Master Control before the next break required their presence. So after the next commercial break, when the movie resumed playing, the two of them ran out the door, telling us not to worry. They'd be back in time for the next break. Well, the next break came, and the break after that, and a third break went by without any sign of their return. Well, the technicians were all so used to the process that we managed to handle all the commercial breaks without a director or an announcer. I imagine that Fred and Tom, assisted by the alcohol affecting their judgment, thought the same thing as they enjoyed drink after drink at the bar. I don't remember who, it wasn't me, but somebody came up with the idea for a brilliant prank. We set up a card table in the control room and dealt out several poker hands and put some money on the table. We turned the brightness down on almost all of the dozen or so monitors, leaving two so we could still see what was going out over the air, and we stationed someone at the door to the studio with a view of the elevators. When Fred and Tom finally came back and were stepping off the elevator, the signal was given and we turned off the last two monitors and killed the sound in the control room. Then we picked up the playing cards and we all sat down at the card table as if we were playing poker. When Fred and Tom entered the control room, their eyes widened. Oh my God! The station was off the air. They had stayed too long at the bar, and the technicians gave up, and the station went off the air. Tom shrieked and dove towards the console and started pressing every button he could, frantically throwing switches and turning knobs. Oh, well, we laughed. He turned and glared at us while we got up from the table and all started turning up the brightness on all the monitors and the sound in the control room. And all was well. Kinda. We hadn't anticipated Tom's leap to the console and all the button pressing he frantically did. For at least a few seconds, for viewers all over New York, the screen had gone blank while the sound of the movie still played. Luckily, it was a late night shift and nobody from management saw it happen. And most people probably blamed their own television sets for the momentary loss of picture. I am also pretty sure that both Tom and Fred gave up drinking for a long while, especially on the job. So there you have it, another edition of Digital Flotsam. This one all the way from the 83rd floor of the Empire State Building. Incidentally, that old voice recording you heard at the start of this show, that was actually the announcer, Frederick Manis, that was featured in the story. And now, our old friend Big Al Waller reminds us that
P-Dub holded the microphone.
Great swing, Dad. What's your secret?
It's no secret, Pumpkin. It's Provisil. Dr. Muscovy said it would make everything better, and boy, was he right.
Provisil. What's it for?
I don't actually know, but as long as I'm shooting below par, I'm not gonna ask.
Sounds great. You think old Doc Muscovy would prescribe some Provisil for me?
Mind you, I'm no doctor, but the way I see it, Provisil's good for everybody, so far as I know.
But as you said, you're not a doctor.
That's right, Pumpkin. I'm just an ordinary guy who takes a lot of drugs.
And golfs like a son of a bitch.
Provisil is not for everyone. Consult the physician before taking Provisil. Do not take Provisil if you ingest food on a daily basis. Side effects may include nausea, vomiting, headaches, stomach cramps, dizziness, confusion, liver and kidney failure, hemorrhaging, loss of mental acuity, diarrhea, shortness of breath, chest pains, swollen testicles, irritated bowel, pigeon toes, respiratory inflammation, permanent blindness, loss of sexual motivation, pancreatic dysfunction, goggle eyes, polio, and temporary darkening of the stool.